padre.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As you said, you know everybody else here. I'm not sure if this one has been here yet. He must look new to me. It is not new, it's just that he's not come to the committee meetings. He's from the compensation fund.
Okay.
And he's responsible for the IT there, information technology systems there. I think the rest you know.
Yes.
Dr. Prinzo, Mr. Kumalo from the Unemployment Insurance Fund. Chris, the CFO, Mr. Motiba, from your province, by the way.
Yes, I know.
And Matsoni and Ganga, you know. Thanks very much, Chairperson and honorable members. At the outset, we'd like to send an apology for the Director General, Dr. Nkosana. There is a parallel process going on here in Parliament where he is participating in the economic sector cluster briefing, which started at 1 o'clock somewhere else in the building. So the DGs of the economic sector cluster have been required to attend there. So I will make the presentation on behalf of the department then, and we'll do it in two parts. The second part the first part is more the programmatic part where we talk of the implementation of the programs, and the second part is dealing with the financial information and the audit report, and that the Chief Financial Officer will handle. What we have also done is to give the program information with a bias towards what has actually happened in provinces, given the nature of your portfolio here, that we look more at what has happened at the provincial level and local level rather than at the national level. So we'll make it in those two parts, and we also, you'll see in the presentation that we have given provincial breakdowns for quite a number of areas. And I will just summarize those instead of going into the details of the figures. So we start with the service delivery program. And here, we see that in the last financial year, 88% of the unemployment insurance fund claims have been processed and paid within 6 weeks of receiving complete documentation, which means that it helps us to make a decision on the claim. There's nothing outstanding, because that is sometimes what delays finalizing a claim is outstanding documentation. So in the case where we have received all the complete documentation, 88% of those have been processed and paid within 6 weeks, which is a quick turnaround time. 35% of the claims that the that the compensation funds receive emanate from the provinces. And in that case, those claims have been processed and paid within 90 days, again of receiving complete documentation. Because the claim for compensation covers, you need an accident report to look at the nature of the accident, you need the medical report. And of course, when the person returns to work, you receive a final medical report. So all those documents are required for us to process the claim and to finalize the claim. So where we have received those from the provinces, 35% of the total of the claims received come from the provinces, and those have been dealt with within 90 days. And then we've also implemented the employment services system, completed the first phase, and it is being implemented in this financial year going up to March next year. And the purpose of the employment services system is for us to register work seekers, to match them with jobs that are available in the labor market, to get employers to register vacancies with the department, and so on. So that is what the employment services system entails. Now, here we start giving a provincial breakdown of the projects that have been identified for support. 2,637 of those have been identified and 2,314 of those have been supported with respect to skills development initiatives that also support provincial growth and development strategies. And you'll see the provincial breakdown, starting with the province that you, Chairperson, come from, 500 projects there, 460 supported, which is 92% of the projects supported there. And so you can run down the next big number there is Gauteng North, 152, Free State, 305 projects, KwaZulu-Natal, 621, going down to Eastern Cape, 687. So that gives you an idea of the breakdown by province. We have also trained unemployed 118,153 have been trained, and of those, 90,691 or 77% were placed, with 36% of them receiving accredited training. So that's again quite a number, and then you see the provincial breakdown of those. The number trained in Mpumalanga, 11,336. The number of them placed is quite high, 93% of them were placed after they were trained. You also see, for example, that in Northwest, 15,000 have been trained and 99% of them have been placed. Similarly with the Eastern Cape, 19,384 have been placed, which is 98%. So the placement rate has been quite high, except in the KwaZulu-Natal province, where you see 40% have been placed. Then retrenchees, people that are retrenched from companies, 2,294 have been registered, 696 have been counseled. Now the counseling includes how to access UIF benefits, what retraining opportunities exist, and what opportunities perhaps for self-employment exist. And then 642 have been referred for training for into other areas of economic activity. And again, you see that there is a breakdown. And you'll see the spread of the retrenchments, for example, in Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Gauteng North, there's nothing there. But then you see in Free State and in KwaZulu-Natal, Northwest, sorry, in Eastern Cape, there have been quite a number of retrenchees that have been registered. Then a breakdown on youth that were trained. Again, running through the provinces, you'll see that 3,826 have been trained, 1,462 were placed, and then it gives you that breakdown, the highest number being in Western Cape was 1,371 trained, and Gauteng 1,934 trained. Looking at inspections, 180,667 workplaces were inspected, and it was found during those inspections that 76% of those had complied with our legislation, and obviously the rest of the 24% they would either have had to undertaking was secured for them to comply, or where necessary compliance orders issued, or if it's an OSS issue, especially on safety, you may then have issued a prohibition notice to say you can't continue working in an unsafe situation and you first have to correct that. So again, there's a provincial breakdown there. In Mpumalanga, 15,000 inspections, 72% of them complied. Gauteng South, 56,000 inspections, 73% complied. And so on, going down to Eastern Cape with 21,000 inspections and 85% complied. And that gives you the overall compliance figure of 76%. Complaints, these are coming in on a daily basis into the offices of the department, mainly again at the provincial and labor center level. And you can see there that 97% of those complaints have been settled within 90 days. And complaints range across all kinds of issues, wages not being paid, leave not being granted, those kinds of issues. Unemployment insurance issues maybe not, discussions not made, or people are not clear about those things. Or people suggest maybe that unsafe working conditions, can a health and safety inspector come out to check the workplace. So there's the provincial breakdown again. Then looking at the high-risk industries, which is your construction industry and so on, there 5,692 workplaces have been infected, and there's a 23% decrease of the reported incidences if you look at the previous year. And here we will break down this again into the provinces, and you'll see that the highest number was Free State, 3,788. Then, on occupational health and safety side, the draft occupational health and safety policy and the bill have been finalized in consultation with the Occupational Health and Safety Advisory Council comprising of social partners, but there's still a process of consultation going on there before the entire process is completed, particularly with regards to the mining industry. Moving on to skills development services and HRD, the total funds that have been available was 2.2 billion. The expenditure was 714 million. There were commitments of more than 1 billion. So the percentage spent against the total budget was 81%. Now, here there's a breakdown again. The slide is not so clear, but just in summary, 37.8 million rand have been paid to 7 providers to train 20,000 unemployed ABET learners. And in the breakdown, we show the names of the providers, the budget given to them, and the provincial breakdown of that. So in total then it is 37.8 million that has been paid to the 7 providers for ABET, Adult Basic Education and Training. 10 million rand was budgeted for the training of the guide and training of career guidance counselors, and training of those counselors are targeted to commence during this financial year. Here again is a breakdown of the grants that have been approved to benefit 10,900 learners on learnerships, apprenticeships and internships. And here we've broken it down by CETA. You'll see it runs from the bank CETA down, the number of learners per CETA, and how those learners are spread or have been spread across the provinces. If we take the bank CETA, for example, the one at the top, there are 824 learners, and those learners were in all of the provinces. You could find those learners, which totaled the 824. If you look at the CETA, the chemical one, there you'll see that in some provinces, they didn't have learners in some of the provinces, like Limpopo, Northwest, Northern Cape, Southern, and Western Cape. And so you can see by CETA how the learners have been spread across the provinces. The second slide is the same, it just gives you the total. The last one on the list is the tourism and hospitality one, the CETA, that's 780 learners. And those were spread across all the provinces. Undergraduate and postgraduate students, 1,148 undergraduates and 1,042 postgraduates received bursaries. totaling 78.5 million. And here we list again the institutions ranging from the Cape Peninsula University of Technology in Belleville, and again spread across the provinces to see where those people came from, down to the Vaal University of Technology, and the Zululand University, where in KwaZulu-Natal, obviously, their main focus being there, they had 23 of those, and that gave us a total of 148. The postgraduates the same. There we break it down by levels of study, and then by gender and disability, which gives us a nice picture of also what steps are being taken in regard to people with disabilities. All the 23 CISAs have signed service level agreements by the 31st of July last year. 20 of them have performed satisfactorily against the set targets, and I understand that they will also at the later stage come and present their annual reports to Parliament. 98,000 employed and unemployed learners trained in programs linked to care skills, of which 33,000 have been completed, and 3,200 youth were trained in a new venture creation learnership. Now, here we go to the strategic projects to the value of 886 million that were initiated to support 9 provinces over the next 3 years. There's a breakdown of the provinces, the amount of money allocated to them, which totals up to 886 million, and the number of learners that would be trained in those strategic projects. And also a breakdown of the kinds of learnerships. You have learnerships, you have internships, the number there across the provinces, apprenticeships across the provinces, bursaries, and skills programs. In Glela, which is the assessment center where apprentices do their trade tests, 9,387 have been assessed, 96 withdrew, 1,482 were absent, 7,905 were tested, and 40% of those passed. And these assessments were conducted between 2 and 6 months. Coming to the labour market policy and labour market programs, the research sample to inform the welfare sectoral determination has been expanded. We have found on reflection that the sample that was taken was too small, given the diverse nature of the welfare sector, and we have expanded the sample and then so that we can then finalize this project in this financial year. We have done sectoral determinations for hospitality. Now, the hospitality sector sectoral determination cover more than 500,000 workers employed by over 40,000 establishments or enterprises. The contract cleaning sectoral determination cover between 100 and 120,000 workers. The civil engineering determination covers about 35,000 workers. We also published minimum wages, a review of the minimum wages for private security sector, and there our information is that there are more than 300,000 active security personnel that would be covered by this sectoral determination. Then an awareness raising strategy on the elimination of child labor was also conducted in all of the provinces, and in addition to that we have also issued permits on the issue of the children in performing arts, those ones that you see on TV. Those young children, sometimes below the age of 5, others between age of 5 and 9 years old, and up to 15 years old, and quite a number of permits have been issued so that there's no abuse of those children. And other child labor activities are covered in our inspection and enforcement system, where inspections are done particularly on farms with regard to child labor activities to make sure that we don't have child labor there. All the staff that in the provinces have been trained on the child labor program of action, and pilot programs were implemented to address the worst forms of child labor, including commercial sexual exploitation, child trafficking, and children used by adults to commit crime. Sometimes children are used to steal, to break into motor cars, steal the radio, and then the radios get sold afterwards, or to get involved in child trafficking and those kinds of things. The newly published labor market information has been captured and analyzed. For example, the labor force surveys, which is released every 6 months by StatsSA. We capture that information, we analyze it to see what are the trends. Reports that have been published, we've published an industrial action report, which gives us an indication of how many industrial actions have taken place in the year, in which sectors have those taken place, numbers of workers that have been involved in those, that tell us in the industrial action reports. We have a report on unemployment and employment trends, state of skills, and the client satisfaction survey. The research and monitoring and evaluation agenda has been implemented, and we've entered into a partnership with the HSRC, and they are conducting research for us in quite a number of areas. And obviously, some of them don't get completed within 1 year because it's a longer-term project. Participating in the ILO conference and the governing body, we have had tripartite delegations participate in the conference in last year, as well as the governing body. And you'll recall that the minister was appointed as chairperson of the ILO governing body in June last year, and his term had just ended June this year, because it's only a one-year term. The current chairperson of the governing body that was elected in June this year is an ambassador based in Geneva of Sri Lanka. And this next month will be his first full meeting of the governing body. NEDLAC, the budget of NEDLAC is on the budget of the department, and there what we do is we do not give them all the money at the beginning of the financial year. We give it to them in quarterly payments, so that you have a bit of a leverage. If you feel that they're not submitting reports, you can hold back the transfer of the money until they submit the report. So, but in any case, in last year we have transferred all the monies to them. The Growth and Development Summit agreements, we have prepared progress reports on those, and a consolidated report of the progress made in the implementation of the GDS was presented to the Portfolio Committee on Labour last year in August, and also a report was prepared for the Presidential Working Group meeting, which is presided over by the President, and is attended by business representatives and the trade union representatives. The Sheltered Employment Factories, there we have developed a turnaround strategy, which was approved by the Minister, and that is being implemented at present. Then coming to administration, in the area of communication, a communication strategy was developed and implemented, and strategic partnerships were entered into to enhance the communication of the department. Training programs were also undertaken for provincial communicators with the Institute for Advancement of Journalism, so as to develop their skills and to be better communicators at the provincial level. And they've also completed courses in basic reporting and feature writing, so that even at the provincial level they can write some features for those regional newspapers and publications. In the human resource management side, the department facilitated development of staff, ensured effective and efficient utilization of the human capital, and also rendered legal services for the department, because the legal services component falls within the HRM domain. The integrated policy on gender, disability and youth, as well as the information technology policies, were developed, and a total of almost 3,500 officials were trained in terms of the identified training needs. Employment equity has been implemented as one of the department's key strategic areas, because the department, just like any employer outside, also has to implement employment equity. I mean, you raise the issue of gender representation, Chairperson. So the department has to do that as well, and also submit an annual report to be assessed and evaluated. On the IT side, CIA, which is the claims management system used by the UIF, was enhanced based on additional and revised business requirements. This is a system that is used to register a claim and to process the claim. And I think it's advanced to a stage now where when someone comes with a claim, you can tell the person immediately whether the person is entitled to the claim, what number of credits are due or are available. You can tell the person how much the person will get, and it can even be electronically deposited into your banking account. So all of that information can be checked. Your ID is verified immediately with the Home Affairs system, and your bank account is verified immediately with the bank that you indicate that you have an account with, so that the bank account number is also verified in the same process. An online EE system, employment equity system, was introduced last year with the employment equity regulations and the employment strategy, and this is mainly to assist employers to, rather than give us a hard copy of the report, to then submit their report online. And we have, the system has been functional. We have received in this reporting round, for example, which started at the beginning of this month, that people have used the system to submit their reports online. More than 700 additional personal computers were commissioned to the ICT environment, so that people do have the tools to work with. And service delivery sites at remote sites was enabled by providing IT services to the 20 mobile labor centers. Financial management, a tool has been management tool to prepare performance targets and to calculate activity-based budgets, has been developed, so that we are more accurate in our budgeting processes, and not just have an overall figure, so that you can see what activities need to be done, cost them, and then you have a much more accurate budget. A revised monthly and quarterly reporting system for performance and budget management has been developed in line with Treasury requirements, and this system will assist the department to account for both performance and expenditure in an integrated way based on National Treasury requirements. So that, Chairperson and honourable members, are the is the progress report on the programs, implementation of the programs, as I said, with a focus on at the provincial level. And then we'll now go over to the finance side, the budget that was allocated to the department and how that was spent. And of course, then the following that will be the Auditor General's report, and the Chief Financial Officer will cover the second part. Thank you.
Chairperson, honourable members, if one looks at the first slide, you notice that the department has an underspend on its budget of 39.9 million. Which constitutes a 2.7% underspend. You'll notice the program administration underspent by 11 million, employment and skills development services by 14, labour policy and labour market programs by 10 million. But in terms of the criteria laid down by National Treasury, a 2.7% variance was far within the tolerance that Treasury expects from a department. If we look at the next slide, and I'm not going to go into the graphs here, for the sake of brevity, if we look at the next slide, you'll notice that from compensation of employees, there was an underspend of 9.4 million, on goods and services, 22.2 million, on transfers and subsidies, 6.7 million, again, posting the 39.9 million. Now, the underspend, Chairperson, on goods, on transfers and subsidies, revolves largely around the allocation that was made for the National Qualification Framework, which did not materialize, and also then the compensation fund, where we are expected to reimburse the compensation fund for claims against the department for people injured, public servants injured on duty, which obviously we do not have control over. Chairperson, if we then come to the Auditor General's report, there are three parts to it: the Department of Labour, Social Employment Factors, and the National Skills Fund. Now, in the sect of the Department of Labour, we had a qualification on asset management, and the corrective measures that we have introduced is an interim asset management unit. The department to ensure that the asset register is accurate and complete and supports the fixed assets indicated in the financial statements, and the asset register to be reconciled with the balances reflected on loans. And that is an exercise that needs to be done regularly, not only by head office, but also by the provincial offices. In terms of emphasis of the matter, there was a problem with the administration of leave records, and the corrective measures there are leave registers have been introduced to ensure that all managers exercise control over management of leave. Management of leave has been included as one of the key performance areas as reflected in each manager's core management criteria and the general assessment factors which are part of the individual's performance management system. This is to ensure that all managers are assessed on the management of leave. Furthermore, through this process, has been put into motion to develop guidelines based on the leave code. Matters highlighted by the Auditor General Chairperson, as disclosed in their 13th of financial statements, for receivables, they are stock debtors amounting to 10.2 million, that is older than 3 years. The department is in the process of addressing the matter and will continue with its recovery action to the extent that the cost of doing so will not exceed the benefits thereof. And we are driving this with a vengeance. The other item, monitoring of controls and employee costs, lack of monitoring over salary threshold, EBT control account, electronic bank transfer control account. The department has noted the concern that the Auditor General has in this regard, but we did point out to them that it is a system error where the BAS and the EBT interfaces do not always coincide. You have a batch EBT interface that protects like this one, which protects the difference which is corrected with the interface in the following month. So we are taking note of that and we'll monitor that more closely, but we believe it's a system problem that is outside our control. Then, Chairperson, we come to value for money matters. The item they raised there was the following: non-compliance with the National Environmental and Management Act. Section 11.2 requires the department to prepare an environmental management plan within 1 year of the promulgation of this act, and at least every 4 years thereafter. The environmental management plan was not approved. The other item was section 16.1, which requires the department to report annually within 4 months of the end of its financial year on the implementation of its adopted environmental management plan for environmental implementation plan. And the latter report was not compiled in July 2002, or was last compiled in July 2002. The corrective measures is an environmental plan is currently in a draft phase. Upon approval, the plan will be submitted to the Office of the General and be implemented. Then to your question in terms of internal audit. It says Audit General could not place reliance as planned on the work of internal audit as the planning process and conclusion on audit work performed by internal audit was not sufficient in documents as required. Now we took note of that and corrective actions have been put in place by way of a project team that has been established to review progress made. Establishment of a risk management unit, annual risk assessments we perform, follow-up responses and audit report issues, the review of the internal audit structure and use of IT software, in addition to which we have stressed to internal audits that they need, whenever an internal audit is conducted, that they need to put in place a mechanism whereby whatever they have done is adequately recorded for verification by the Auditor General. The question is to then step onto sheltered employment factories. I think we all know that sheltered employment factories have come a long way with some severe qualifications, and we believe that we are now on the right track as the DDG mentioned. With the turnaround strategy, we believe that we are on the right way in putting this thing in place. There was a qualification on supply chain management process not being followed. And the corrective measures is it's practical to send to a supply of the two main raw materials used, i.e. SABS approved textiles and wood, since there are limited suppliers. 3 for textiles and 4 for lignin. Now, this is something that we need to clear up in national treasury, but it would be impractical for us to go out on tender every time that we need to acquire wood and or textiles. To go out on tender. So what we would like to do is to suggest to them that we go out maybe on a tender once a year and then allocate the supply of wood a particular tender and my textiles on the same basis. Instead of having to go out and tender every time that we need to acquire. It's a lengthy process, it's time consuming, and we have customers that need to be supplied with whatever they've ordered. Then, chairperson, there was an issue on impairment of fixed assets, and we are busy addressing the 60% completed by year end 06-07. The remaining 5 factories will be completed. Policy is in place to reconcile fixed assets on a quarterly basis. So then there was an issue regarding stock in transit, not non-disclosure at year end. And this issue revolved around the fact that stock was issued from the factory and the stock was in transit to the recipient or the client, but there was no proper tracking in place regarding that issue, and we've now put into place a monitoring control regarding business activities on the FES. All information relating to goods dispatched but not invoiced has been submitted to the auditor, and the full record of goods in transit is maintained and continuously reconciled with delivery notes. Other matters, chairperson, was a risk assessment, corrective measures, appropriate senior staff to be engaged in performance functions, material correction made to the financial statements submitted for audit, corrective measures, annual financial statements were amended to take into account obsolete stock to be written off, depreciation of assets, and disclosures of financial leases. The chairperson, that is also in place. On the issue, I'd just like to add that regarding the assets, not only of the self-employment sectors, but also the assets in the rest of the department, are becoming more and more problematic in the sense that the requirements in terms of the Accounting Standards Board and the Auditor General are becoming more onerous. So this is an issue that we need to give close attention to. And that goes across the whole department. Then, Chairperson, they touched on non-compliance with applicable legislation, supply procedures, corrective measures, exercise in major newspapers for alternative suppliers, preparation of a fixed plan, corrective measures, formal policies to be established. Another issue with regarding non-compliance with applicable legislation, internal control procedures for payment progressing, corrective measures, preparation of payment, and authorization is performed by separate functions and individuals. In other words, we need to address the segregation of duties in this area. And then payments within 30 days of invoice. The Auditor General and Treasury regulations require invoices to be paid within 30 days. We feel that this is impractical because we get a monthly statement from the supplier. So why do we need to pay each and every invoice if the supplier gives us a monthly statement and we can then pay that statement on a 30-day basis and we will share that up with National Treasury? Another issue I raised was the Medical Schemes Act, Section 20, Business of a Medical Scheme. And the Council for Medical Schemes has agreed that the self-employment section merely needed to apply for exemption in terms of the Section 8H of the Medical Schemes Act, 131 of 1998. It's also time as an affordable alternative to be introduced in the self-employment section as approved by the Department of Labor and the National Treasury. And the other item is Public Finance Management Act, insurance contracts relating to all assets, and we said there are measures in place to safeguard assets that include proper warehousing, security and premises, and assets and proactive management to monitor and control. I said this, and it is not customary for departments of the state to take up insurance. In fact, there's a regulation that no department may spend more than 250,000 rand a year on insurance of its assets. The top treasury approved at the moment. Then there are items regarding matters of governance, the chief plan of the chief. Corrective measures, there is an action plan and control metrics for putting in effect the turnaround strategy, which the DDG referred to. And then again, the internal audit, non-reliance on work of internal audit, which revolves around the fact that internal audit did not keep adequate records of what they did. Corrective measures, internal audit has been seconded to assist self-employment section management. Because when it comes to the National Skills Fund, and the qualification there revolves around project expenditure. And the corrective measures here is the National Skills Fund has conducted a detailed analysis of the current procurement processes against the audit qualification. The National Skills Fund is in the process of drafting proposals to align the existing procurement processes will be supply chain processes and policies of the department. But yes, Chairperson, I must also just point out that the National Skills Fund are not have power unto themselves. There are processes in place which, in my opinion, are totally adequate in monitoring the expenditure, not only monitoring the expenditure, but also in allotting the contract reserve supply. Although those processes are not in line with the processes outlined by the National Treasury. But we are busy addressing that with within the department and also with the National Treasury. Then the other qualification revolves around completeness of commitment, and the aggressive measures is an accrual-based accounting system will be implemented, which the DC has agreed to and which we are in the process of implementing at the moment, which can ensure that commitments are correctly reflected on the financial statements. A request has been made for acquisition of an accrual accounting software package, which, as I said, the DC has approved and we are in the process of doing it. Regarding the emphasis of the matter, the basis of accounting, departures and deviations, corrective measures, the department has taken note of the general science, and we are going to implement an accrual-based accounting system. Then, chairperson, on other matters, material corrections made to the financial statements submitted for audit. We took note of the auditor general's comments, and we do admit that there were some fairly material corrections that had been made to the financial statements of the National Commission. And then matters of governance, operational manuals for funding windows, all operational manuals, with exception of the social development funding window, have been approved and submitted for review. And this relates again to the fact that the modalities in terms of their procurement processes, as I said, are in my mind very conservative, very transparent, but they do not fully comply to what Treasury expects. And that is what the Audit General has measured us against. And then, the last item again is internal audit. And a project team has been established to review progress made with the establishment of risk management units, annual risk assessments to be performed, follow-up responses on audit support, review of internal audit structure, and the use of IT software. Thank you for coming on the
line. Thank you. Thank you for the lengthy detailed presentation. Thank you for also the breakdown of the provinces. Before members, I give you, I want to congratulate you for the gender policy that you have established. And my question is, when is the gender policy going to be implemented? And maybe if, as the committee, we can also share the policy with you. Maybe you can send us copies of your gender policy so that we could get the understanding of what is going to be done in terms of the low numbers of women in senior management. Members? Honorable Nasiko, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for the change. But let me start with what he was interested to me. The issue of PubSat. I think the thing that you will know what PubSat is.
Why me?
I heard over the radio some with a month ago that
yes.
That's going to finish.
Yes.
And when will it be? You see, we're going to the Poland in 2 weeks' time. NCOP has a program of taking parliament to people. So this time around was Western Cape, and then the Western Cape, we've identified Borland, and Borland is the wine producing region of the country. So that we will take some of those with us. And my other question is, the good policies on service delivery, for instance, that would be your page 2 on the slide. On the UIF and whatever, if one has just one document that has not been submitted, does that claimant get information, or will it wait for you when you go and check whether or not they have money for you? How do you communicate with your claimant? And the other chair, on employers registering vacancies, is there any success here? In other words, would you be able to say at least there's some growth in employment terms and numbers? And do you have a way of job seekers if they could register online or something like that, so that you sort of have employers and employees to be registering if there's anything? And my last one will be to the CFO. On non-compliance, is there anything you will do, or let me put it to the show, where will these corrective measures be in place? Next, when will they be completed? Then lastly, Chair, on assets, I've looked at the report. I don't see anything on assets that says asset register. My eyes are not doing their job very well. But if not, why? And how do you register your assets? Is it annually, 2 years, or is it depending on the lifespan of whatever asset? If it's a computer, for instance, at least you give it 3 to 5 years. Then the last check, the last check for now would be the understanding that was mentioned. I sort of total something like 41 million that was not spent. Why?
Thank you, Honorable. Third person, Honorable Member, and our devoted staff and friends. I also thank you for the report that you have made. With all the excuses or apologies for the mind issues not attended because of the other committees, which sit every day. On page 4, slide 8, the Honourable Member has already commented on this, but I would like to find out which way the registration is done. Is it done in the Labour offices, or is it registered job seekers to make a job? Is the registration done in the Labour offices? And then I would say that Anne has such a high number of retired people, but she was not been counseled and trained. Isn't there a danger of contributing to the unemployed who then turn criminals because they have nothing to do and they have not been trained? I refer to this because cases and had the problem with a high number of criminals. Perhaps something could be done on the training and counseling of the people who are now unemployed. Then, like 26, the strategic project, what could those strategic projects be? And then children in performing arts, that is the, I think the children who are infant or something like that. In their performing arts, I would like to know what exactly the children do, because as for a group of children, it's just this weekend, and I found that they are quite interested in drama jurors. Because when they are drama jurors, they also use their drum to dance, and also when they are singing, if within the list that they have, drama jurors could be included. And then finance, like understanding by 39.955 million rand, is this because there were no groups that could be trained, or was it because products of business plans which were submitted and products not approved? And then you come on the chat.
Thank you, Honorable
Thank you, Chair. Apologies for coming late.
I apologize.
Those things affected me because by last night I had about 213 questions. So I'll cut them down. The third issue is the department has had in the previous year. Let's take the 3 years. One, which was a qualification. Then it was an emphasis of matter, then it's the qualification. Why? You know, the department needs to have moved a little bit better on that. So this will be the issue. I know it has been covered. What's the situation on the staff vacancy rate? If my memory serves me well, this was too high last time, and it tends the department to say financially and it has the savings when it has underspent, just because of the high start rate. Three would be the issue of the 3 year long staff debt, your loan. A better way of managing this. The other issue that I came in on it was the issue of payment and the issue of invoices, later statement. The normal business practice would be pay on the receipt of an invoice, but then the department wants a statement. So it makes it easy, you know, get an invoice to pay. What really motivates the department to say would rather get a statement for the whole month? You know, if you get 40 invoices, then you wait for 40 invoices before you pay. What really moves that? I note that in the auditor's report, the strategic plan was not achieved. One other thing that I wanted to check was on the supply chain. Your process, your specification, whether you have that specification committee, evaluation committee, and adjudication committee. If not, why not? Well, Honorable Mdonam has asked the issue of the asset register, but I'm sure I've heard that the department ensures the services of the service provider to attend specifically to that matter of asset register. Why is it up to this date? Maybe even the contract period has expired. Why we don't have a straightforward asset register? From the report that we have is that there are sorts of registers, but they do not reconcile. But then we cannot have this being done by the department itself. You employ a service of a service provider, still the asset register is not reconciled.
So one issue I've forgotten about it, but I'm sure it's under skills development, maybe I'll remember it, where the department has budgeted about 127 million to train 20,000 people. It ended up training the 20,000 people, but used about 37 million. One could not reconcile the two. If I come to that, I'll check it in the book, but it's there. You know, there was this budget, you met your target of 20,000 people, but you didn't use the 127 as planned, as budgeted for. You used 81 or 37.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Can we get this
question? Thank you, Chairperson. We will spread the answering of the questions, otherwise we should have left them behind not to come to Cape Town. The CFO will deal with those issues that you have specifically raised for him, together with the other issues that have been raised, the invoices versus statements, the stock, debts that are older than 3 years. The DDG Corporate Services, Maswati, will deal with the issue of the vacancy rate, as well as the issue of, there was another issue, Maswati. Can I just say that on the issue of the PubSub, I'm not sure all my colleagues know what you're talking about. I think you should take them and go and show them what the PubSub is about. But it is something that has to be dealt with in terms of the liquor legislation. And it's not something directly for us. And I think that there has been a pronouncement made by the trading industry people around this. But it is a problem. It's going back to the old TOT system, except that the PubSub is now much more than the TOT. But it's an issue that we would welcome if it is banished, because it does create unhealthy dependency, and it leads to all kinds of other social problems. So it is a problem, and we fully support the issue of banishment of the PubSub. The issue of the unemployment insurance fund, as I indicated, the system is such now that you can immediately give the person information. Now, if for some reason or other there is information not available because the employer didn't complete the UI-19 form, the UIF funds will immediately contact the employer to say that we have this claim from this claimant, but the documentation from your side is outstanding. And that information will then be secured from the employer. So you communicate with the people right across the desk immediately to say your claim is in order, you'll get so much money, or your claim, there's some documentation outstanding, we need to get that information from the employer, and then the fund secures that information from the employer. Issue of you talk to the employment services question around the registration of vacancies, and we are working on a regulation. It's been drafted, it is now being consulted upon with INMEDLAB, that would require employers to register vacancies with the department. At the moment, employers advertise vacancies in newspapers and all kinds of ways that they use to advertise. But for us to match the work seekers that we have on record with the department, and they have been registering, and I think it is another question, work seekers register at our labor centers all across the country, 130 of them. But what we did not have in detail of vacancies that exist. We had to do it manually by looking at newspapers and registering those so that we can then match the work seekers with jobs that are available given their skills profile. The system that is being introduced now is that the work seekers will be on a database in a department containing all the information, including the skills profiles of those individuals. We then want to have the jobs that are available in the labor market registered by employers with us, so that when a work seeker comes, you can then, based on the skills profile and look at the job profile, then match the people to those jobs. And therefore, they will then get much better opportunities, you will much quicker match people to jobs that are available in the labor market. So once the regulation is published, promulgated by the minister, it will then compel employers to register the vacancies with us, rather than us manually going through newspapers and looking at what jobs are available. It will be much better if those are registered with the department directly. There has been a growth in employment. The last labor force survey has shown that over 200,000 jobs had been created in the last year. You will recall it's less than the previous year, but this time they had excluded, I think, jobs in the informal sector. And that is why it's 200,000. The previous year it was 500,000. But there has been a growth in employment. The next set of questions were those that were directed to the CFO. Chris, could you deal with those?
I'd like to start off with the question regarding the non-compliance. And the non-compliance question relates to the shelter employment factor. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the non-compliance issue results from the fact that when the self-employment statute gets an order, let's say from the Department of Health, for example, regarding the manufacture of 5,000 bedsheets, for them to follow the process of going out on tender will most likely put them in the predicament that they will not be able to deliver on the deadline that the Department of Health needs to keep in case or consumer hunger or ever wants to achieve. So this is something that we need to clear out with Treasury in terms of non-compliance with strict Treasury regulations. And say to the National Treasury, what process would be acceptable to you for us to go out on an annual tender in terms of the supply of textiles, for example, and the supply of wood, because that is mostly items that are required and really required that require urgency. So that is how we intend to address the non-compliance issue. Regarding the payment on statement, that again refers to the self-employment section. It does not refer to the department. The department pays on invoice on a regular basis. But the self-employment section, and Chairperson, we must remember that since the preferential status was removed in 1999, I believe. The shelter employment factories have been sponsored by the department to receive a $45 million. So they are running at a loss. Now, because they are running at a loss, they try and order things in such a way that they don't have huge profits. So if I order from a particular supplier 10 times a month, then it would not make economical sense to pay 10 invoices by issuing 10 payments per month. So what they do is they wait for the statement to arrive at the end of the month,
and I pay respects with instant. That does not apply to this part of the world. We are operating on description. Regarding the asset register, Chairperson, as I mentioned, the asset register, we employed a consultant to assist us with the asset register, and as the qualification reads, it says that in spite of a huge effort made by the department, due to the size of the department and the spread, remember there are 127 labor centers, 10 provincial offices. As a result of the spread, we could not complete that exercise timely by the time the Auditor General had completed their audit. But we are still addressing the issue. The chairperson, I want to bring to the Select Committee's attention that assets, the management of assets in government is becoming a very, very focal point. Not only for the department, for all government departments. And it's something that we cannot neglect, something we should not neglect, and something that we are addressing to make sure that this is now put into place. It is not a case that we do not have an asset register. We do have an asset register, but we have not yet completed the task in terms of linking the assets to a barcode and linking the assets to a specific office or a specific location. But we do have an asset register. Regarding the underspending, this department has been underspending for years, and it relates basically to our vacancy rate. Because if you don't have the staff, you don't have the concurrent costs that relate to that particular staff member in terms of telephone calls that are being made, stationary routines, and so forth. So the underpinning is largely attributable to the vacancy rate, and not to the fact that we are not fulfilling our mandate. One can argue that by having a vacancy rate, you are not fulfilling your mandate to the extent that you could have fulfilled. One can backtrack that argument. Regarding the staff loans, many of these staff loans are as a result of housing guarantees that were issued by the state. And what we do is when these people leave us and the bank institution calls on the department to meet its guarantee in terms of the housing, when the state has no alternative but to pay. Now, the process in recouping that money is a tedious one in the sense that we have to contact SAF, see if SAF can locate the debt. We have to contact the Department of Home Affairs to see if they can locate the debt. Failing that, we have to approach the state attorney for him or her to give us a ruling as to whether this debt is economically recoverable. But it is an area that is of concern to us, and we are now following this one up with vigor. And the 10.2 million that is outstanding for more than 3 years is not acceptable. and we know that we need to do something about this, even if it needs additional extra effort to address the issue. The other issue was regarding the strategic plan of the self-employment factories. It does not apply to the department, it applies to self-employment factories. The strategic plan of the self-employment factories to a large extent revolves around the turnaround strategy. As I mentioned earlier, we need to sponsor year after year after year after year since the preferential status was removed. So it was difficult to, at this point in time, although we will address that as well, it's difficult to draw up a strategic plan until you know exactly what direction is this organization going to take, what format is it going to take, and what direction is it going to go. But that's something else that we need also to address. Regarding the BID committee, in the Department of Labor we have a departmental BID committee. We have a departmental sub-BID committee. And that is the process for that to follow as far as the prescripts are concerned by National Treasury. But in the department, we also have a project evaluation committee. And that is the route that we follow in many instances regarding the National Skills Fund disbursement, where you have an evaluation committee. I'm not talking specifically about the National Skills Fund. You have an evaluation committee that evaluates the bids that they get.
So is the evaluation committee, project evaluation committee, the same as the project team? Is it the same or?
It is in a way. Remember, if you look at the Department of Labor per se, if we go out on a tender, and anything above 500,000 we need to go out on tender. If we go out on tender, then there are numerous factors that we need to consider. There's pricing that we need to consider. There is BEE status that we need to consider. There is value for money that we need to consider. But in terms of the NSF, we are talking about the Project Evaluation Committee. This committee needs to apply its mind as to who can supply the best education that is required. And for that reason, you need to know, and Dr. Flores, you need to help me here. For that reason, you need to know who your customers are, so to speak. In other words, you can't just take a bid on face value in terms of the quote, the money involved. You must know what is the capacity of this organization or person to deliver in terms of the training requirements that are set.
I think this is one issue that the right also priorities are general. You know, if I understand you correctly, there is a one-stop shop. The committee that would do the specifics of the bid, they would evaluate it, they will adjudicate on it. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yeah, flourishing and just going to
Thank you, Chair, if I may assist. Thank you. How it works is it's two completely separate committees. You have a technical committee that has to look at the technical specifications. I'll give you an example, Madam Chair, if I may. We've just recently, as you might have seen in the press, appointed an administrator to take over a CETA. Now, when we had a look at a process to appoint a service provider, there was a technical committee that looked first at the capacity of providers to look at things like what is their capacity for PFMA, accounting, legal processes, and you score that first to get a technical capacity. And that's a separate committee. And once that committee then makes a recommendation in terms of scoring. And then it goes to a second committee that looks at pricing and only pricing. And then it is adjudicated on that. So there's first, very important. That's why you have these things called 80-20 or 90-10 type tenders and so on. Because the 80% could be technical or 20% pricing or 90% technical or 10% pricing. That's the sort of like that. So it's very two separate. For example, I usually serve on the technical side because I'm a technical expert. I don't know much about pricing.
You can? No. Matiba?
Maybe one, just to add on this, Chairperson, one area that could be coming forth is the issue around how we allocate funding in respect of the social development funding needs. Because that's what happens in the provinces, where you have a number of training providers who are qualified in specific areas. Now we have the Provincial Selection Committee, which is chaired by the Provincial Director, which will assess those projects in terms of the training of unemployed. Now that's the area where the Auditor General is questioning us, that this should go through a bidding process. But we are looking at it within that context to say, were we wrong in the manner in which we are approaching it or follow the route as proposed by the Auditor General. On the question of the retrenchees who are not being cancelled, I just have to, more especially in KwaZulu-Natal, I just have to indicate that the first error.
Can I just check if the CSO was in?
Yes.
Thank you. The one area is about under-reporting, in the sense that we don't have a full complement of counselors across the country. This is a service that we have not been given fully. Although in terms of the new employment services system, we are invoking that service so that we begin to give it a full time to those people who are trained, as well as those who are registering. So not every province was actually reporting in terms of the people canceling any place. But when you go to the numbers that have been trained, you'll find that those people, because they are registered as job seekers, and they're also registered on the unemployment insurance system, then they form part of the pool that is being trained. So in a way, it's just that some of the provinces were not specific about it. Now we're beginning to monitor that very closely so that we get the consistent reporting on this area.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, there were a couple of other questions, I think, from the honourable members that I might just want to add on to. One on the Employment Services, the registration of work seekers and also the registration of opportunities. We want to just mention we've also broadened the sort of scope of what you can register as an opportunity. We used to think it was only vacancies, but you can also register opportunities for learning, you know, to put people into learning programs. Also, we can register people for opportunities for the National Youth Service. for example. So beyond that. And I just want to indicate, Madam Chair, that I did do a quick check. The employment services system we are starting to implement now, it's not new. The department has always been registering work seekers for many, many years. But what is new is that it's automated and it's connected. So we have all our centers now connected. So people all over in different parts of the country can start looking at these things. And we are expecting around about November, December, maybe January, to also then allow access to through the internet so people can start accessing it themselves. I want to indicate, Madam Chair, that I did check the figures, that as of 2 days ago, we had 40,000 work seekers registered on the system across the country, and there were 6,000 opportunities registered. So we believe that as we go forward, the matching between the work seeker and the opportunity will start getting better. So you might have a person in Cape Town matched to an opportunity in Messina, up in the other side of the country, and the people can start traveling to get to opportunities. That's what the objective is. Those are the figures that I got off the system in the last few days. The other one I wanted to just mention, the honourable member here, I'm getting a bit, but I think the reference to the 37 million and the 121 million was the ABET training for NSF. Maybe I can just explain that the 121 million is what is budgeted and allocated, but the 37 million is what is being paid. So this is not complete. You know, we only pay as learners progress. So what we pay to the service provider is 37 million, but the total budget is still the 121 million. I think that might be the difference in terms of the
process.
No, yes, it's 20,000 budgeted number of learners, but not all have completed. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Was there a question?
Yes, yes. What are the strategic projects?
Thank you. Yes. Thank you for that. I just forgot that one. The strategic projects that were allocated to all the different provinces last year, there were about, it's about roughly about 10 million rand per province that was given, about 886 million rand that were given to all the provinces. And the 9 projects include workers and learners in things like tourism, agriculture, business processing, mining. It depends very much on the province as well. Like in the northwest, a lot of mining and tourism. Down in the Eastern Cape, a lot of agriculture and so on. Up until the last financial year, March 2007, was to get the money established and out. And now all the provinces are in the process of signing service level agreements and starting to put the learners in place. The target is 26,000 learners over the 3-year period between now and 2009. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We still have two on the gender unit and the staff vacancy.
Why are they keeping the gender?
Gender.
It's always been seen as a woman thing. They don't see themselves. Thank you, Chair.
That is off the record.
The issue on gender noted, a copy would be sent to you, and on the scope where we are with the process is that we are now undertaking a consultative process, and as soon as there is that awareness that has been created, implementation. The question on the vacancy rate is that if you go to the annual report of 2018, we have noted that we are saying to you the staff complement of 9533. This includes the compensation fund and the UIF, who are not paid from the same fiscal test. That is when we look at an integrated approach. However, if we look at where we're standing in terms of the additional posts in addition to the ones of the establishment, which are contract posts. We also lump it up into the whole number of the establishment figures. To say that the vacancy rate is sitting at 21.6% would be saying all those factors taken into consideration, we are sitting at 21.6% in terms of the vacancy rate. However, we've undertaken a process in the department that said stand up and be counted. In this exercise, we were verifying the establishment here so that in due course we exactly know who is in which vacancy and what is the total amount payable as a total tax to that person, so that we can arrive at actual figures of the total cost of the establishment and vis-a-vis the budget. In this financial year, we are sitting at the compensation employees budget of 580 million. And at that point, we want to say, has the 580 million been the exact figure for which the value of the people who are in the of the establishment actually the correct value? So there has been a very much hard process in terms of CASAL verification and then coming up with a confirmed establishment in the process, so that when we say 21%, we do not consider contract employment. We then say, in terms of our integrated approach, when we bring on board the compensation fund and the URS, then we have the right figure.
Okay, on the, before you make a follow-up on another topic, I want on the, to make a follow-up on the gender policy. Have you established the gender policy in line with the national gender policy framework from the Status of Women?
Yes. That's what we consulting with them on that.
Okay, and then are you also provincial consulting, or are you, I understand you're the national department, but what I want to know, where are you also consulting at provincial level? Because this will actually also go down to the provinces. Let the Honorable Governor do his follow-up, then we'll be calling the
I was tempted to say at the beginning before I asked my questions that I hope we won't get some denial on this issue, because on the sub-issue, on the sub-vacancy rate, you turn to the next page, it doesn't talk, it talks about employment and vacancy for critical occupations. And from there, starting from the bottom, you can see senior management over 39% staff occupancy rate. Those are not what you're talking about, learners or contractors and so on. There are key people like inspectors, where you're supposed to have 1,979. Those are not learners. The drivers, 4 instead of 26. I mean, I was trying my arithmetic there, it says 2,058. I mean, that's not true. Right. Vacancy is 2,058 in the whole country when the country is leading of unemployment.
Sure, the first question is that we honestly did not consult provincially. We consulted from the National Office on the Status of Women only. It was hindsight on our side, and we would like to point out we should have done so, we did not. And how we can reverse the process with is probably the consultation should happen with you. You guide us how we can just factor the provincial elements into the equation, because we messed up on the step, honestly. The issue of the categories and where the vacancy status in terms of percentages are sitting, or in terms of numbers, as you rightly calculate, and you question an example of senior management in critical occupations, you will find management not in other critical occupations. That is why here the definition of critical occupations was paramount in vacancy. We are not denying when we say that. The reason is because there was an exercise when we then paused for a minute to try and restructure or refocus the organization for service delivery. We then ended up with some of the positions being conservative into something like contract post to allow the transition. And once the transition was completed, we didn't want to end up with a situation where had we appointed a person permanently and it emerges that this role is no longer played at head office but played at a local level, then you have to deal with all the concomitant factors that come with permanent employment. So we then allowed ourselves a period of saying, let us then scale down the employment of the critical vacancies so that we finish the refocusing of the organization and then deploy people exactly where you would find that their services are now needed. That was an exercise that we once came to the forum, to this select committee and tabled that the department was undergoing a refocusing exercise to better align its services for better service delivery. So that's the reason why when you find that some positions have not been filled and they are critical in the nature of classification of their roles within the organization, that there is that exercise that has held back the deployment of some of the positions within the establishment. When it comes to inspectors and the numbers that you say, the numbers are huge, and when you look at the vacancy rate of basically 31%, it also talks to that exercise that we have undertaken. It impacted on the feeling of vacancies in a rapid way because the restructuring or the decentralization exercise that we have embarked on in the department is not completed. Once it's completed, it would have had an exercise where we would have done a business process mapping exercise. We reaffirmed our service delivery model in line with what basically the resource plan would dictate. When we look for a service delivery model, we look at what are the pillars of the service delivery model. People are critical, automation is critical, and partnerships are critical in terms of how we would unpack our service delivery model. And that would inform how we recruit. You would find that if the members are talking to service automation, in terms of automation, you find that arriving at rolling out a service for the department might not need 10 people if you know that you're going to use partners. If you know that you might be needing automation, then you would then say, in that regard, the strategy focuses differently from what it originally had said. So all this is something that is holistically packaged in the refocusing exercise.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question around what we are doing about the issues raised by the Auditor General. Now, in the presentation, we did indicate some corrective measures that we are implementing, but in fact, what we have done was to put together a project team that work off what we call an audit qualification matrix, where we list all of the issues that have been raised by the Auditor General, then looking at what is said to be the root causes of those issues and what plans we are putting in place to resolve that with time frames. And then we receive a monthly report from the team at our management meeting to see what progress is being made in addressing those issues. So we have an action plan to deal with the issues raised by the Auditor General, which includes some of these corrective measures that are being listed here. But we're looking at holistically for the department, all of the issues raised for the department, all of the issues raised on the Special Skills Fund, the issues raised in regard to the Unemployment Insurance Fund and the Compensation Fund, so that we are addressing these issues so that by the next audit, we have resolved these issues. And you will see that using that system, the last audit of the self-employment factory, for example, showed that we had 10 qualifications there. That's down to 3 in the latest audit report. So it shows that quite a lot of progress has been made in addressing that. So similarly, for for this report, these reports, we have put in place the process and the mechanism to deal with those issues and have plans to address them. So we hope that we can wipe out these qualifications and wipe out these, particularly the emphasis of matter issues in the audit the next round. So we have put in place the mechanism and process to deal with those.
Just a follow-up on the issue of the staff test. Because normally, because it has been explained that these were guaranteed by the department and so on. But then what systems were there? You know, the department guarantees that the person can be taken to show the very security, whether the pension of the person and so on. Does it mean that there was no security?
The first line of recruitment is always the employee's pension benefit, which we cash, and whatever leave pay they might be due for the person. But that doesn't always cover the amount of the guarantee. And the housing guarantee is a public service benefit. So it's not something that we can refuse to grant. But yes, it's not a case that this person leaves our employee and we just walk away from it. The first line of defense is a tax whatever this person needs to recover from their pension fund. And then the residual is the amount that we now need to process via tax and houses and home affairs and whatever other methods there are. We even, at the moment, we're even using tracing aid.
Just one final question that hasn't been covered yet is the issue of children in performing arts. So the children in performing arts issue and the issue of drum majorettes. The main focus of the children performing arts one is the one where they use children in advertising. Now they require sometimes these children to spend lots of hours at the recording studios. And the abuse that you find is that they don't give them food, they make them sit unnecessary hours, and they don't look well after them. There's no, if it's a child under 5 years old, you may need a child minder there to assist that child. So it's in that case, that is the focus, the main thrust of the children's performing arts sectoral determination, if you call it that. So it wouldn't cover drum majors. It's here where small children have actually been abused, they're not looked after, they're not given food, they sit long hours in recording studios with no care. So it's to eliminate that problem. So it wouldn't cover the drum majorette issue, as one understands it. Thank you, Chair.
Any other questions? Isn't there a way of building up insurance within the payments that are made for the house? So that the your program, because the person needs to then the insurance
cover up for the similar case.
Yeah, Chairperson, as I said earlier, the government does not take us in service. But what normally happens is that, as we know, property appreciates. Especially in the last 10 years, property has appreciated substantially. Now, when you issue a housing guarantee, then the housing guarantee is issued at the value of that property at a certain or specific point in time. Now, as the value of the property improves, so then there's a point by which you can say to the bank, we are no longer going to guarantee the property because the property value has escalated to the point that there is no more guarantee required. Now, in some of those instances, we have been remiss in doing that.
Chairperson, just on these programs to address the workforce of child labour, we do raise in this the project on commercial sexual exploitation. Now, here we are working with the Department of Education, Department of Home Affairs, and the Department of Social Development. Within that one of children in commercial sexual exploitation. The one on children used by adults to commit crime, here we are working with the Karatika Police Service, the Department of Social Development, the National Prosecuting Authority, Department of Education, and the Department of Justice, because all of us, those departments have a role to play within that. And then the one of child trafficking is also linked to the commercial sexual exploitation, because there's quite a risk leading up to the World Cup 2010 that we will get child trafficking for sexual exploitation purposes. And we are working with those departments concerned to develop strategies against that. They have, in this one, on commercial sexual exploitation, for example, phase one of the pilot project has been completed, and the total number of beneficiaries presented was 519 already, there is a process also with dealing with the procurement of
of these children for these purposes, where the Sarakan police services are quite active in there. So we, these are the ones that we consider to be the worst forms, where children are used by adults to commit crime. And I used the example before where children are sent to go and break into motor cars, steal the radios, and then the radios get sold, or to sell drugs on street corners. So we are working together with the department, the prosecuting agencies, the justice and criminal system to eliminate it. But of course it's a process that we have to engage on. And as we go to 2010, some of these worst forms of child labor will in fact become worse. As people exploit the activity around the build-up to 2010 to engage in these kinds of activities, which is very problematic. So those are the pilot projects. We have others as well in dealing with issues where we have to, you know, with education. We're dealing with the issue of water, with the Department of Water Affairs, because sometimes children must walk long distances to go and fetch water. So that's something that Water Affairs must address, to bring water closer to communities so that you don't have this problem of children having to walk long distances to go and get water. So those are the key ones on which we are focusing, but it's a collective effort and it involves more than one government department. So some of these departments have activities themselves where they embark on, but we have a coordinating mechanism where we can bring those initiatives together, where these departments, lead departments with supporting departments, can come together to strategize and discuss their initiatives and to see what progress they are making. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. On the AGRIS one, maybe if I could explain this one. The International Skills Fund project, and then it was established for 20,000 learners in total. When the National Skills Fund did the cost estimate, they established that it would cost in the region of 121 million. So that was the budget, 121 million. They then went out and did request for proposals from different service providers. And there were seven of these service providers, the training providers, were then appointed to do the 20,000. The project then started. And in the National Skills Fund, everything is driven in the project management mode. And so there are very specific deliverables that a training provider has to meet. For example, they would first have to register all the learners according to what they agreed. So they would say, for example, they would register some of the learners in KZN, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, etc. And the learners would also be registered at different levels, level A with 1, level A with 2, and so on. And as they meet those deliverables, there is disbursement. They actually pay out small amounts of money as they go through the project management deliverables. And that's why, honorable member, the payments made to date is 37 million, because the learners are not finished yet. You see, it's still going. So it was a budget of 121 million. In actual fact, after we received all the tenders and appointed the providers, the budget actually went down a bit to about 103 million. So we over budgeted. So we've got some spare cash for the next phase. So we're going to run another 20,000 learners this year again. And so on. So it's actually based on deliverables. Now, I note your concern, and being an AVID pro, you're involved.
Yes. Sorry,
ma'am. No problem. So with there's always this difficulty with learners, you know, they come and go and so on. But we do manage the service providers very carefully. We talk to them, and they have certain deliverables. And if they meet those deliverables, we disperse the money. But before we disperse the money, there are very important checks to do, because otherwise we do get queries from the Auditor General and our accounts department. So when we establish a contract, a service level agreement with, for example, Project Literacy, they know exactly what those deliverables have to be. before we actually disperse. I hope that's good.
Thank you. Member
Sajjari,
would you like to add any other questions? Okay. Thank you very, very much. And I hope my good will
Thank you very much.